Guys, welcome to this bonus episode of Pop Kitchen. Don't forget, we post new episodes of the full show every single Wednesday. But this week, bonus, we're talking about what George is going to talk about, The Bear Season 2. George, you've finally seen it.
I have. We've had a couple of emails in who have asked us, you know, have you finished Season 2 of The Bear yet? Yeah. I've finished it. You haven't. You are way behind.
I'm just
aren't you?
So. Well,
we've switched places careers. Because you.
I recommended it originally.
You reviewed season one at the beginning of this year, and then I went and watched it. And I finished season two. But that's okay, James. I take the baton from you, and I will do season two for you, for those people now. And I realize we are a little late to it, but I still think there are a lot of people out there who are only getting round to it, or perhaps have only just got into the show. It's still we've still only had a year of The Bear being a show.
Yeah, totally. It's only turned that season two around quickly, didn't they?
Very quickly. So what I will say to those listening is that if you haven't seen The Bear but would like to, or have not finished season one, I would just skip this section. I'm not going to talk any spoilers about season two. I'm going to talk very lightly about the plot details, but in order for me to talk about what happens in season two, I need to talk about what happens at the end of season one. It's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've done a TV review, actually, so it's not often we find ourselves in this situation. So skip ahead for that. But The Bear season two. So yes, only a few months after The Bear season one finished, we had season two come back. And for those who don't know, or just to remind everyone, The Bear, set in Chicago. The season one followed Carmi, a former shit-hot, white-hot, top-of-the-world chef who was dropped back into working at his brother's sort of deli, a deli sandwich shop that was complete chaos after his brother.
Kind of like a food truck that doesn't move.
Yeah, basically a food truck that's, literally the wheels have come off. And his brother had committed suicide. And so Carmi had come back to try and save this business. And you had this kind of really interesting dynamic of, you know, a Michelin star chef at like in the trenches of food production, completely two worlds away colliding. And you have this sort of rogues gallery of characters who don't belong and don't clash. And I said, when we've talked briefly about The Bear here and there, that it feels in it's got good dramatic bones. Mm. It feels very much like a sitcom.
Yeah.
I think if it was made 30 years ago, it would be a sitcom. Hey, I'm coming back to take over the Brothers
another
restaurant.
Another day of
well,
service.
Well, call me why I order.
And I spilled veal stock everywhere.
Wah, wah.
Can you start making a cake?
But so it just says it's got good dramatic bones, and obviously it is very funny. So season one concluded with them discovering the money that Michael had borrowed from Cicero. Michael had been hiding them in tins of canned tomatoes. In a way, can I just say that I still don't quite understand. I've really thought about it. In the sense of like how... I just feel there's something like a little thing missing there. And at the beginning of season two, we are shown that in the basement of the restaurant, a basement that is not referenced in season one and is never referenced again in season two, we see the cans and the tins that Mikey was pressing the initials into and putting the money into. And I'm thinking, does this mean that no one went down to the basement and saw the tins there and make the connection between the two? It's just... I'm a little lost there. Minor detail.
Were they not using was there a thing about he wanted them to use the tin, the large
tin
cans?
Yes, but he was sealing the tins with the money inside, right?
Yeah.
But he was sealing it ostensibly in the basement downstairs.
Yeah.
A basement that from this one scene at the beginning of season two, other people seem to use. Or maybe no one else went down there, but they don't explain it. But,
right, okay.
You know,
okay.
Whatever, it doesn't matter. But anyway, season one ends. They found the money. They decide to shut down the restaurant. I think we're going to relaunch this and we're going to do it properly. It's no longer called The Beef, as it was titled. We're going to call it The Bear. It's been Carmi's dream. He wanted to do it with Michael. And so the gang, Carmi the chef, Sydney, his like protege that's come in, Marcus, Richie, Tina, Ibra, Fak, they all are part of this kind of pseudo family of like trying to relaunch this restaurant, and the goal is to make it fine, you know, excellent and something of Carmi's standard. That is the premise. That's how season one ends, and that is the premise of season two. The restaurant is closed and they are focusing on renovation and transforming this space into a place of into a reputable establishment. And I'll start with stuff that I like, really liked, you know, the good stuff about the show is that, first of all, it creates a really nice context in season two about what's happening post-COVID in Chicago, right, in America, really, with these types of establishments. And there's a scene where Sydney is sort of going around town trying to refine her palette and trying to try stuff. And she will notice that there are places closing every week, almost every day. Like, it feels like casualty. Chicago.
Oh, no, sorry, where is it set after COVID? When's
I think it's like present day.
Present day, yeah.
So it's kind of enough time to not have to like talk about lockdowns. But, yeah. But it's like casualties of the food scene, and it's clearly weighing on their mind. And I think that the dramatic setup for season two is more interesting in a way than just watching people firefight for season one. And just for the record, so for season one, which I didn't really review properly on the show, I thought was like good, solid, some great moments. I liked it. And, you know, that was about it. That's fine. But that's it. Like a good, solid show. The other thing that's great in season two is it really takes time to explore the characters and flesh them out, give them space. And I think that works really well. There's many sort of break-off episodes with the characters. There's a great one with Marcus when he goes abroad. There's a great one with Richie where he's staging. And all of them have this common theme, which is, but despite the sort of gritty, frenetic surface of the Bear, underneath it, just kind of like warm, almost like utopian view of like, hey, we can all get better. We've been stuck. Life has dealt everyone a rubbish hand, but through, you know, a shared goal of improvement and the sort of the principles.
Everyone's a little bit flawed.
Yeah, yeah. But and the principles of what running a great restaurant is about, which is great service, you know, working as a team above, working as a group above the individual. That's really interesting. So you have this kind of like nice, warm, sort of dewy center. But then the tension comes with that idea of if you are going to surrender the individual to serve the group, what happens to the individual as a person? And Carmi is someone who we've seen is like really struggled with that and was clearly traumatized by his experience in fine dining. By the way, and when we talked about the Bear off air, you made a really good point, which is like, I would really like more about Carmi's experience.
There's a really good scene in season one where he's, you know, chopping something or like he's under this really overbearing chef.
With Joel McHale there.
Yeah, and it's like this really interesting, intense context to where Carmi came from.
Yeah.
And I thought, surely, I thought there should have been more of that in the Bear season one. And I thought it'd be interesting to show like what actually happened to Carmi under that and the extremes and compare the two. But it never really, I think for Chase Basin reaction, it doesn't do that in season two.
No,
either.
Not really, which is a shame. I will say that, and like what's, you know, it's witty at times and it brings you into this world which has its own sort of codes and language and sort of familial feel to it, which is great. And basically I kind of finished season two, a bit like I did with season one, thinking like, yeah, that was solid, that was good. However, there's just a couple of things that I think like limit it for me, and I haven't come away thinking, I don't think it's the best show on TV that a lot
despite
of people
it
do.
Getting 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think people, again, it's what we talked about.
It's
the
new show bonus.
Yeah, it's the new show. Oh my God, it's the new show.
I have a
show.
Thing and it's new so and you've never heard of it.
And I'm like, yeah.
It's good, but because you just discovered it, you have to, oh my God, it's so good, you've got to watch it, when really it's like.
Yeah. So don't get me wrong, there are some really good like highs, but like I said, but those break-off episodes with Marcus and Rich and stuff are great and funny and really make you feel good. Mm. The weakness of season two, I think, is with Carmi. Carmi, who's a character who's very interesting, but what they try to do essentially is start a relationship between him and this girl that he used to know in the area, right? A girl who they've always liked each other, but it's this thing of like, you know, he's trying to start the new restaurant, and she's from the past, so she kind of reminds him of his brother. Mm. And does he have time for this right now? Is he in a place where he's ready to open up emotionally? And her name's Claire. And, you know, that's basically Carmi's arc and storyline for this series is his relationship with this woman. And the problem is that her as a character, Claire, never felt anything more than just an obstacle. She never feels like a real person. The chemistry never feels real. For me, the dialogue, some of the stuff she says, I'm just like, you're just not real. She's very sort of like, hey, Carmi, how you doing? She's just so in awe of him and floaty. My girlfriend made this point. She said she feels like a Delaney Rowe sketch. If anyone knows Delaney Rowe on Instagram. Yeah, fantastic. Sort of like satirizing this stuff. And it's kind of true. And for something that's actually quite important to the structural integrity, to the architecture of this series, I'm like, this isn't, I don't feel any connection to this because she's just so clearly an obstacle to enlighten.
A plot device versus character.
Yeah, she's a plot device. Yeah. And I'm like, if you really wanted me to connect to this, even if she is ultimately an obstacle or whatever, you as writers, you needed to flesh her out more, make her feel like a person. But every time she was on screen, I was just like, yeah, I get it. And Kami's going to have to think about this or if he wants to do that.
She needs to contrast that with Kami, who I think from season one is like very... There's a lot of depth there, and he's got this like sort of 1 hour sleep, exhausted stare into the mid distance. Where like I say, like, oh, this guy's going through a lot, and I feel like there's a lot going on.
And I just feel like that kind of whole through line just really didn't work for me, and I didn't give me anything. And the longer the series goes on, the more pronounced that becomes, which is probably why I enjoyed the breakaway episodes where that relationship is not in it.
Yeah.
There's a really, really minor detail that really bugged me as well about Sydney. Sydney, by the way, who I think is the most interesting character. And in many ways, sometimes I thought I almost would have preferred this show if she was the main character.
Right.
Because I really like her position as a... she has lots of experience and lots of ideas, but has been knocked down by failures and mistakes in the past. But she's young enough to learn. But she is a black woman in a very white masculine environment, industry, and a very hyper-aggressive environment. A woman who's incredibly intelligent on her own. And like sometimes when she's on screen, I'm like, I almost wish this was your story instead of it being about Kami's. That's a minor thing. But the minor detail that really bugs me is that Sydney is meant to, you know, she's living with her dad and like she's putting a lot of pressure on this project to work because like it's, she basically says, if this doesn't work, I don't know what I'm going to do. She's putting everything into the bear because she's tried some things in the past that are hinted at in season one. And like she's putting all this pressure on that. And, you know, she's sort of broke. She's broke and broken. This is it. And yet, I don't understand why, but the costume design for her, they have her wearing easily $700 cardigans and jumpers and clothes.
From where? How can you tell?
Because you can just tell the
$700.
She's wearing like a cashmere patchwork paisley printed. The clothes she's wearing are very, very nice. Not just like she dresses well. She's wearing incredibly good clothing. And it always brought me out of it. There's one episode, like I said, where she goes around town trying food. And I'm looking at the clothes she's wearing. And I'm like, yeah, you look fantastic. These are so fashionable.
You look gorgeous. I love it. Inspired.
So fashionable, so trendy. But I'm thinking, this doesn't make sense with your character, which is strange. Because
Kami wears a white t-shirt every day.
Which makes total sense.
Because he's like, I can't decide an outfit. I wear a t-shirt.
He wears white t-shirt and he has that jacket, that patchwork sort of woolen jacket, which is very, very nice and also looks very expensive, but that makes sense because
he's got one nice item
that he spent his money
winter,
on
winter, summer, all year,
exactly. But with Sydney, I just find it really distracting. So you're wearing really nice clothes, which is a stupid thing to get hung up on, but for someone who I'm meant to believe is like at rock bottom and is, you know,
I'll have to look into that when I watch it,
you'll see what I mean.
For any of you more sartorially educated in like high fashion, like I'd love if someone could point out, be like, oh no, it's actually like a...
And I think that's one the thing that I kind of hit the ceiling with the bear, which is like, it's good and it's solid, but like, I don't think it has a bit of depth, but like it doesn't have a lot of depth for me to get into. I never finished an episode and really wanted to talk about it with Anna, and I watched it together, and like we never really took it apart afterwards. We would go, huh, yeah, man, that was a good episode. And that's really it. I'm not saying it doesn't have depth, it doesn't have substance. But like sometimes I'm like, you could be deeper.
Is that the sort of sitcom element of it where it's like you're not really meant to leave a sitcom and dwell on it, and it's sort of structured in a way that feels like it's out of genre?
Because they have half an hour episodes, and with that kind of sitcom comparison, I'm like, well, then I wish it was funnier at times slightly more eventful. But when it tries to lean into the hard drama, I kind of think, well, I wish you'd given me more in the past. Like, give me more about his background, or show me Sydney's past as well. I don't know if it actually delivers on the real depth to land the big dramatic emotional punches, other than it being kind of like a fun carnival of activity to be around.
It's kind of that thing of, does TV need to be super absorbing? You have to watch the next episode every week, or can it kind of just exist and it's there and it's very pleasant? But you're saying it's almost like, why am I here? Why bother watching? Is there going to be a third season, by the way, based on season two?
Oh yeah, definitely. I don't think, I'm not thinking why am I watching this, whatever. I think it is just that kind of like half an hour episodes, solid, good, and like that's fine. But that's my point. When it starts to almost demand more from you emotionally and dramatically, I kind of think, well, I don't think I've really been given that much to really feel to this. However, and not to, again, like I said, it's good and solid, but having said all of that, in the middle of this season, they just drop an hour and 10 minute episode that is set 5 years before the events that we're in. And so you have John Bernthal back as Mikey, but you also have Jamie Lee Curtis, Bob Odenkirk, Gillian Jacobs, John Mulaney, and Sarah Paulson.
Oh my God.
And it is all set at a Christmas dinner, and you have Jamie Lee Curtis playing the mother. And I kid you not, it is one of the best episodes of television I've seen this year.
Whoa, it is
absolutely fantastic.
Right.
Jamie Lee Curtis does a performance in that I'm like, that's what you should have won the Oscar for.
Yeah.
Not Everything Everywhere. I know obviously it's TV, but I'm like,
no, I know.
Compared to Everything Everywhere All at Once, where she's in it for like a couple of minutes.
We thought she's like good.
She's fine. But this is one of, I think it's the best Jamie Lee Curtis performance I've seen.
You convinced me to go watch the whole series now. I was going to just be like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah. And I put it on and I was like, whoa, this is, and it all works. And
do you think it just, that lifts up all the other episodes?
Basically. I mean, there are other highs. There are other good episodes, but that episode in particular, it does so much at filling in the blanks of what you've been hinted at about other characters, about Mikey, about Sugar, about Fak, about Richie in particular. It's the first time we see his other half, and like in the past.
You want more of that, not necessarily in length, but in focus.
No, I don't need them to do that episode every time. I think I'm not bringing up that episode to make a point about the overall show. I genuinely just mean that episode is really fantastic. Like, it's just really, really good. And, you know, I love Bob Odenkirk when he's in stuff, and like in this, he's really good as well. That is the standout reason that does elevate that whole season.
That's a package.
That is like prestige. Like I said, one of the best episodes of TV this year. And so the rest of it is fine. It's good. It's solid. Could be a little bit deeper at times. I think the central plot with Carmi and the relationship doesn't work. But that's not to say that there are episodes and moments and stuff that really matter and mean a lot. And it does build, like, as you'd expect from The Bear, to a sort of tense final episode where you're thinking, okay, what's going to happen? Always accompanied by a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
I mean, we had an email in the past that was like, you know, this season is better than the first. I think I'd say it's better than the first. So I will watch the third season. It's good. It's solid. Has an amazing middle episode.
But everyone just calm down. I'm 100%.
I think it's just like, come on, guys. Like, it's good. But how much more, like, how much is it really giving you to sink your teeth into and to think about?
Yeah.
But maybe it's just me. I feel like I've been a little bit too negative on it. But
no, I kind of see echoes of what you're saying in season one. Like, I had episodes in season one which I really liked, and I thought it was new and original, but it was massively overhyped for me. People were like, oh my God, The Bear. And I was ready to watch it. And I was like, yeah, like, it's really good. And there's like a couple of scenes which I found really interesting. And I liked, like, as I just said, like hinting at his old life. And there's like that one scene that I was like looking forward to more, but it never.
And do you know what it is? Is the kind of, like I said, the kind of warmness that's underneath it, that kind of family element. I think the show doesn't know how much to lean into that sometimes. And I don't know how much that works with the show. So take something like Boiling Point, right? Which I still think was fantastic, which they've just released the TV show of that, actually. Yeah. But as for the film, like, that works really well, but there's no like warmth in that. And I feel kind of like scarred by Boiling Point because that was 90 minutes of like sheer terror. And sometimes I feel like the warmth of it can take the edge out. But then sometimes I think the warmth is exactly what it needs. But then, like, by the end, even some of the, like, nice, like, heartwarming moments that they have, I'm like, yeah, you're stretching credibility there a little bit. Right. It almost feels like do you know what it is? This sounds like a very snobby comment. It's like sometimes when it does, like, the really warm elements, I'm like, you're like a really Chicago-y thinking man's Ted Lasso. You know what I mean?
I totally see that.
There's a couple of moments.
If we were all just nicer, we could succeed.
Yeah, if we all just work as a team. person gets dropped into dysfunctional workplace to turn it around.
I think it might be a sign of the times, the kind of stories we want to tell and receive.
You know what? Actually, I wouldn't have been surprised.
If we're all just a bit nicer and more tolerant, can all the world be a better place? Like the Ted Lasso, like very brightly saturated, everything's going to be okay, overcoming very basic adversity.
I wouldn't be surprised if in the pitch with the bear, it was like, yeah, it's all going to be about kitchen stuff, but we're going to deliver the Ted Lasso sprinkle.
That they make sandwiches instead of football.
Yeah, and we're going to turn it around. It's all going to be about family. And sorry, about the thing about depth, about characters, sorry, not to labour the point.
Yeah.
Is that like, there's a scene in it where all of the characters kind of like have like an ugly duckling narrative, and like Tina, she has like a, she's just this chef, but actually like she's quite talented and she's got this kind of like heart of gold. And there's a scene in it where she's with sort of a new collection of people that she's hanging out with in the season. And she like goes to karaoke. And guess what, James? She decides to sing a song all on her own. And she sings a song, and guess what? She's got a beautiful voice. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. She's more talented than people give her credit for. Yeah. She's beautiful on the inside as well. Like, I get it. It's not that deep, but like, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
But like, I got it. I think I've seen that before somewhere, but thank you. Anyway, that's The Bear 2.
Well, guys, let us know if you have similar thoughts to George or if you did or didn't like it more. Send in your thoughts, your questions to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. We'd love to hear your impressions on The Bear Season 2. And if you think it's better than Season 1 or worse Season 1, if you're going to be watching Season 3, hello@popkitchenpodcast.com.
I will still continue to run around my kitchen in my flat going, cousin, behind, yeah. corner, fire, yeah. Sydney. Yeah. Just for fun.
I'm now going to... It's been moved up my non-existent list of like things I need to... TV I need to get back to.
Overall positive enough.
Net positive. Yeah.
Net positive.
There you go.